This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
For our final talks, we're going to have two speakers, Peter Stock and Steve Tomljanovic. You've heard earlier Dr. Roberts mentioning we have a new allocation system. Well, this has been the work for almost a decade, probably 8 years. So it's upon us now, and it's going to have to change the way we manage patients on the disease wait list. So we're going to tell you what it is, and we'll tell you how best to strategize the flow of your patients and the management of your patients while they wait for a kidney transplant. Dr. Stock, President-elect of ASTS.
Thank you, Dr. Vincente. Well, thank you. We're going to have a panel of my colleagues, my surgical colleagues. Larry, Moe, and Curley, you want to come up? Where are they? Rio? Chris? Because we're going to try to explain the new kidney allocation system in sort of real time. Explaining the new allocation system is about as much fun as for you as getting a barium enema, because it's just painful. But I really want you to understand sort of the it's important, and it's important because you're going to have to be able to explain to your patients where they are on this list, and it's a little bit unclear. So, as I start this, I want to ask the group first question, and I'm really asking you this to sort of explain why it took us 10 years to do this. I've talked to you about the new allocation system for a long time, and Steve, who's giving the talk with me, has always made fun of me because we haven't got there. But this is going to be initiated at the end of this year, so it's here. So just by a show of hands, I'm going to ask you what, if you were designing a new allocation system, what do you think is the most important aspect? Do you think, would you devise a system that's based on utility? In other words, anyone can, not anyone, but the person who's going to get the biggest bang for the buck gets the transplant. Would you base this on justice, equal opportunity for everyone? Or would you base it on efficiency? What is the best and most efficient and perhaps most financially, makes the most amount of financial sense? So, by a show of hands, who would put utility at the top of the list? Okay. Who would put justice? And who would put efficiency? One-third. And I noticed efficiency was mostly the coordinators out there. So, I am... and that, in fact, is exactly what happens whenever we ask this. And that is why it's taken us 10 years. We started in 2003. I was the chair of the committee in 2007. I got fired in 2009 because I didn't accomplish anything. And finally, we've come full circle. Now, in 2007 to 2009, it was based principally on utility, something called LIFT. I don't know if you remember me talking about it. So LIFT is your survival benefit. You take the year's predicted survival with a transplant and subtract the year's if you remained on dialysis. And whoever got the biggest bang for the buck got the transplant. Ultimately, that went to the Office of Civil Rights, and it got shot down as being age discrimination. So it didn't fly. In fact, if you look at the amount of using modeling, which I'm not going to get into, if you look at the modeling, the biggest bang for the buck was LIFT. 25,000 added years if we shifted to a system of life, added if we shifted to a system of net benefit. It's been watered down, and we're left with something called longevity matching. I think it's a nice compromise. I hope you'll agree, and we'll explain exactly what's involved with it. So just most of you know that there are different allocation factors for liver versus kidney. Liver is based on survival. Who is going to die on the waiting list? The person who's most likely to die gets the transplant. It's interesting that in the liver world, Dr. Hirose has now become the chair of that committee. That's coming full circle because now they're talking about net benefit, looking at net benefit. Interestingly, but I would caution you to go to the Office of Civil Rights before you start a 10-year process. And then kidneys, as most of you know, predominantly based on waiting time. There's a little component of sensitization, a little component of matching, but it's basically waiting time. And then we have two lists, standard criteria donors, extended criteria donors. Extended criteria donors, the older donors, basically, we just allocate those based on waiting time. Standard criteria donors, waiting time mostly, 4 points for sensitized patients with PRAs greater than 80%. That's how it is now. And you get a couple of points for DR matching. Who in the current system was an extended criteria donor? Age over 60, boom, you were an extended criteria donor. Now that I'm almost 60, I feel that my kidney's good. And in fact, there are many good 60-year-old kidneys. And I think that's the rub, because as I start talking about the new system, you're going to see that the extended criteria donor is going to be an extended criteria donor. They are going to be not great kidneys, and I'm going to show you exactly how not great they are. So here we go, upcoming changes. And as I go through this, I'm going to go fairly quickly, but then we'll break it down into case series. And as I go through, I'm going to have my colleague, Dr. Talmanovich, talk about how these changes may impact the waiting list. And you're really going to have to listen to that because it's your patients that are going to be asking you these questions. So the new system, about 8,000 additional life years gained annually. There's going to be improved access for the highly sensitized patients. There's going to be improved access for ethnic minority candidates, and I'll talk about how that's going to happen. And there's going to be comparable levels. They're seeking comparable levels of kidney transplants at the regional and national levels. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'll show you how they think that might happen. Most importantly, we are going to replace the standard criteria, the ECD-SCD model, with something called KDPI, Kidney Donor Profile Index. To that, we're going to add this component of longevity matching. We're going to try to match the kidneys that have the longest life with the recipients that have the longest life. Now, I'll get back to that. There's going to be increased weight given to highly sensitized patients. I think you heard about our new system of how we define sensitization. And because of that, we are increasing the amount of points somebody gets if they're truly sensitized. I will talk about that. Another big change. Patients are going to be listed at the time they start dialysis. It doesn't matter. If you started dialysis 6 years ago and you just show up now for your transplant, you get 6 years of waiting time. Okay? Backdating the time to the time of initiation of dialysis for everyone. Right now you can list when the GFR drops below 20. You can still do that. So you can start the clock. You need to refer your patients early for that reason. They still can get transplanted, especially with a living donor, probably only with a living donor, if you can list them when their GFR drops below 20. Still can do that. We're going to be able to use A2 donors into blood type B patients. And that's how we're going to try to fix this race disparity, because most ethnic minorities, both Asian and African Americans, are blood type B. So that's going to help us a little bit with that issue. Pediatric priority is still more or less going to stay the same, and for the pediatric folks in the audience, we can talk about that, but kids are not getting shortchanged at all. They'll still go right to the top. We're removing payback system and we're removing all variances. So punchline is it's going to be the same system for everybody in the United States. Now, the thing in the with a white background is the way kidneys are allocated now. In the new system, what's going to happen is a kidney is going to become available. We're going to calculate for a kidney what's called the KDPI. I'm going to show you how you calculate that. The best kidneys, the top 20%, are going to get allocated to the best 20% of transplant recipients, those with the predicted long life. that's the first two categories, really. The bulk of transplants, about 70%, are going to go what we now call the standard criteria donor. They're going to go to people with KDPIs between 35 and 85. And then finally, I told you that ECD kidneys, the extended criteria donors, are now going to be really ECD kidneys. Their KDPI, the lower the KDPI, the better. KDPI score greater than 85%, those are going to be the new extended criteria donor. So if you look on the left side, the KDPI, those are the factors that are used to calculate KDPI, donor age, race, hypertension, diabetes in a donor, the terminal creatinine, if the donor died of a CVA, height, weight, whether they are DCD donors, those are death by donation by cardiac death, and whether the donor has HCV. Looking at what this kidney donor profile looks like, if you're going up on the right side, the higher the KDPI, the worse the kidney in terms of average survival in the average recipient. And so you can see if you're talking about a KDPI greater than 80%, you're talking about a two-year survival of the graft in the average donor of about 75%. I don't want to complicate things too much, but suffice it to say, if you get down, just look at the KDPI. Don't look at the risk index, just the KDPI. KDPI, remember, the extended criteria donors are going to be greater than 80%. And so you're looking at five-year graft survival of 53%, eight-year 33%. So this is what you have to talk to your patients about. Remember, the kidney comes in, we calculate a KDPI, and then it goes into one of these sequences. Now we're going to talk about each one of these sequences, and I'm going to ask my colleagues whether they would accept a kidney for this donor within the constraints of the new system, because it's not that straightforward, and you'll see why. And then we talked about longevity matching. Who's this top 20% that the top 20% of the kidneys are going into? It's going to be calculated based on the candidate age, their time on dialysis. The longer the time on dialysis, the worse their longevity, whether they've had a prior organ transplant, and whether they have diabetes. That's it. That's how you calculate the post-transplant survival time. So we're talking about longevity matching. It sometimes makes sense, sometimes doesn't. But now I use this to bring up my colleague, Dr. Tomlanovich, who I want to take over.
Thanks for that intro. All right. Here's what we are now dealing with in our wait list. So on that left-hand column, it's the current waiting list and about 5,600 patients. 53% of them are diabetics. 47% of them are over the age of 60. And you can see there's a quite good number of these patients who are fairly highly sensitized. And then just looking on that right-hand column is what we've added in the subsequent, in 2013, to the waiting list. So obviously inactive states are less likely in the first year you're listed. We're continuing to add the same percentage of diabetics, but you notice that we have had some decrease recently in the number of people we've actually added to the wait list who are over the age of 70. So there is some effort as we talk to patients and as we present them with realistic data about how long, and you saw from John Roberts' presentation at the beginning, many of these patients are not going to make it to transplant, so we have a little bit more realistic discussion with many of these patients up front. So the things that are really important, and, you know, we're trying to finish this day and actually do some cases, it's really going to be a little bit different than what we used to say to patients. You know, if you live 7 years, we'll see you back in 7 years. Now there's going to be certain subgroups of patients that we evaluate right then, and we're going to have to think about evaluating them right then because they may have enough points that will accumulate that may get them an offer much sooner. And we really believe that those patients who are in this higher survival score, estimated post-transplant survival score number, will be transplanted sooner. So that 25-year-old will have some advantage, and he may get transplanted sooner than that 65 or 70-year-old, just based on some effort to do longevity matching. The biggest thing that we have to think about and continue to think about is always a problem, is those marginal candidates, those patients that you look at and you go, wow, I just don't think they're going to be here 7 years from now, 8 years from now. Do you need to really list them? If they're on dialysis and you don't list them at the time you see them or at registration, the way the current rules are, that if they survive 5 years, come back and see me and then we'll talk about transplant, list you, backdate your waiting time. In fact, there was UCLA in Southern California, they've actually been doing this for a number of years because they had a variance to be able to backdate to dialysis. And so in many of their elderly patients, unless they had a living donor, they would tell that recipient, you really are not going to be able to wait this long for a transplant if you don't have a living donor. If you're still alive 5 or 6 years from now, come back, we'll talk about it. Logistically, that's a little problematic because there are factors which could potentially get some of these older patients transplanted. If they have a very high probability of a zero mismatch, if they have potentially a directed donor that comes to them. John Roberts has actually looked at some data about these patients that we list, and it's interesting, although we quote these numbers, we do have not an insubstantial percentage of patients who come to us and actually get transplanted 1 to 2 or 3 years within listing that are somewhat random, somewhat not random if they have high chances of zero mismatches. And so some of these marginal candidates, if you turn them all away, you may lose some opportunities to transplant them with, you know, relatively good kidneys. So that's something that's really we're going to struggle with ourselves, as well as try to communicate that to you as the community, plus even more importantly, communicate to the patient. And as Peter's already talked about, I think these people who are going to be getting ECD kidneys in the future, this KDPI greater than 85, we're going to have to expect poorer outcomes in this population of patients. So Peter and I decided we needed some audience participation at the end, and I want everybody to at least raise their hand. So we put these four cases together. This is a 48-year-old obese type 2 diabetic male. He's been on dialysis for a year, so he's already got a year of waiting time. And he's got a BMI of 44. So how many of you, if you were sitting on the selection committee, saw this patient and had no living donors, would you put this person on the waiting list? Yes, anybody? All right. So in this particular patient, if he lost the weight, didn't have a living donor, and came back to us 5 years from now, he wouldn't necessarily lose any opportunities or at least the points that he might gain from the waiting time. 73-year-old, type 2 diabetic female, coronary artery disease, has been stented, no potential living donors, blood group O, on CAPD, doing pretty well. Would anybody put that patient on the waiting list? All right, I'm going to ask our panel. So would any of you put that person on the waiting list?
Ask your audience.
Has anybody put this? So I want to say a yes. Any yeses? Lenny is always putting people on the waiting list. And did you say yes? He would too. All right, so what if this person got a zero mismatch? Would it have a really high probability of a zero mismatch? Would you, if that made a difference, if they predicted might get an offer in the next year to get a transplant? Okay. Third one, 32-year-old. Non-compliance, lost their graft at the age of 30, back on dialysis. No living donors. All right. How about that? I'm sorry, over here we got a three yes. So young people who mess up get at least one more chance. Okay, I got that. All right. So now you got the middle-aged guy who's diabetic. He's not so skinny, and he's smoking a couple packs a day and doesn't want to change that. Would anybody list this guy? Peter would. Peter is a smoking fan. So, all right. So, I mean, these are the, you know, it sounds silly, and it may be silly, but these are kind of the things that we deal with every day. And making these decisions at the time of evaluation or even thinking about it while they're on the waiting list, it's a problem. So let me just skip to this next part, which even throws another monkey wrench into this idea, is these sensitized patients. Now not only are they going to be, these highly sensitized patients are going to be listed regionally or locally, but they're going to get priority offers on a national, regional, and local level. And so the idea is that these patients may have a one shot in 10,000, 20,000 to get an organ. And so the idea is trying to potentially get these people transplanted by exposing them to more donors. And the old allocation system is when your PRA was greater than 80, you got 4 points, which is equivalent of 4 years. Now you can see the new allocation is that by the time you get to 100% PRA, you're going to get 202 points, which is equivalent of 202 years. So you're going to get tremendous amounts of advantage time. So if that patient with a CPRA, when we do the evaluation, comes to us and their CPRA is 98%, they're going to receive many years of waiting time. And so those patients also, as we talk to them, we're going to have to be evaluated and be ready to be transplanted because they may get an offer pretty quickly. So that's going to change what we do in terms of our workflow as well. And, you know, this is something different than what we have done and what we've taught you guys about how our program works. And these changes are going to affect, you know, how we respond to the patient as well as feedback to you about how to get them ready. So the thing that I want to make very clear is please don't stop sending them early. They'll still get their wait time when the GFR hits 20. And if they have living donors, we can preemptively transplant them. So the system isn't going to backdate GFR to 20, but it'll backdate dialysis. So, but again, our message is send them early, send them often. We'll get them a transplant if they have a living donor. The other issue is the concern about pediatrics. And pediatrics also, as Peter mentioned, will get some priority. They'll get the best kidneys. One of the things that they moved it up, not just to the KDPI of 20, but out to 35, because you can see in this algorithm that the patients, the way that these kidneys will be offered, again, the mismatched kidneys, the prior living donors, the highly sensitized will be up there. And the pediatrics kind of comes down to about level 4, and moving that up to sequence B gives them an opportunity to get good quality kidneys and still get some priority over the usual allocation system. Now, one of the things that's been problematic, and you know this, is that if you live in Tennessee, you wait, or actually you don't have to go to Tennessee, you go to Oregon and you wait 3 years for the same kidney that you'll wait in Northern California for 8 years. And this regional disparity is a huge problem that I'm not sure this is going to address, but they've got to try to make that happen. And so trying to get the bad kidneys across regional barriers may help some of this, but I don't really believe it, and Peter can give his own sort of input. So I'll stop there, and Peter's going to talk about some other clinical scenarios.
We're going to do this real quick. We're going to be done by 6, I promise. So I don't think that is the attempt, sharing the ECD, the new ECD kidneys, is the attempt to alleviate regional disparities, which is absolute nonsense. It's not going to do anything, and it's something we're stuck with. Over cocktails, talk to Dr. Hirose about a better strategy that they're trying to blow up the whole system in the liver world, and that's a good cocktail conversation. So now, it's not quite straightforward, and I really want you all to hear some of what goes on in our heads at 2 in the morning when we get the donor calls, because it's not straightforward. Here's our first donor. It's a 38-year-old male. He's declared brain dead following head trauma from a skiing injury. Previously healthy with no significant medical history, his terminal creatinine is 1.3, gives him a KDPI of 21%. That's a really good kidney, not the top 20, but it's a good kidney. In the sequence, this can go to a zero ABDR mismatch, local. So that 72-year-old lady that just got listed, that you guys didn't want to, we said she had a good chance of a zero mismatch. this kidney is allocated to that lady. She just was listed. Larry Mo Curley? Let's hear. Rio, what do you think? Yay or nay?
Well, if we were dumb enough to list this patient, yeah, I'd accept it because it's a perfect kidney. And why would I turn it down for anyone that's being offered this kidney?
Well, I'll ask you that question in just a second. You guys would both accept this kidney, right? You're on call. She's on the list. She's at the top. She gets the offer. You'd accept it. Okay, now you just found out. You just found out that the next patient on the list is a 36-year-old male with ESRD secondary to GN. Would you skip the 72-year-old to give this 38-year-old donor kidney to the younger recipient listed at your center? How many say yes? Okay, let's find out what our panel says.
No, I'll pass it on. But what do I tell the 73-year-old?
I think that, you know, in reality, it's not a black or white issue. The 72-year-old may have multiple medical issues that need further evaluation. So
She's good to go.
But I think that this is a controversial topic even at our, you know, in our own meetings. But there are surgeons at our center who would turn it down and go to the next patient.
And you could get sued for that, by the way. Could you not? Dr. Roberts, could you get sued for doing that?
No. I've never known anybody who's ever gotten sued for that.
Okay. Dr. Fries.
I would take it for the 72-year-old.
Yeah. I think that's a problem. I think we have to, the allocation systems should not.
Any allocation system that allows us to do that is badly broken.
I agree.
And that's your fault, Dr. Stein.
I think. Thank you, Dr. Hirose. We love each other. Okay, donor B, a 56-year-old petite female smoker, 5'1", 50 kilograms, no history of hypertension or diabetes, says an MI is resuscitated but becomes brain dead secondary to anoxia. Her terminal creatinine is 1.5 KDPI of 75%. Her serologies are clean. The donor team tells you the aorta had pretty bad plaque. All right, this is a sequence C kidney, just barely a sequence C kidney. All right, now this series C, standard criteria donor kidney, KDPI of 75%, is offered to a 42-year-old male, 6 feet tall, 95 kilos, with ESRD secondary to GN. He's unsensitized. He's been waiting 7 years for a kidney. Dr. Hirose, accept or not?
So, you know,
I caught you with your pants down. You weren't paying attention, were you?
I was. I was paying attention, but I doubted this. Doubted the 75% KDPI because it sounds like this donor is worse than a 75% KDPI. But in any event, let's just say that it is a 75% KDPI. I wouldn't take it for a 42-year-old with GN. I might take it for a 65-year-old with diabetes, though.
I think the other thing to realize is that the KDPI is not granular enough to pick up real differences. I had a donor offer once where the KDPI was listed at 66%. The guy was actually getting worked up for CAPD placement. So, you know, you still have to use a lot of judgment here. Clearly, this kidney is more than 75%.
I wouldn't use it in this recipient.
Okay.
The data doesn't support giving suboptimal kidneys except for certain populations. Those are olders, patients or diabetic patients or, interestingly, African-American patients and people who do worse on dialysis. Those are the patients that benefit the most from getting an ECD and suffer the least from giving a sort of extended criteria donor versus a standard criteria donor. So I think one has to think about who you're benefiting most by taking sort of less than optimal kidney.
Okay, thank you.
So, can I just make one other comment? I think this is actually the group of kidneys that is going to cause us the most trouble.
Yeah, I agree.
Because before, we had a black and white definition of what ECD is, and we do now. But this type of kidney, I mean, clearly we all know it's not going to have a great outcome. But we're kind of forced to, you know, fit it into a non-ECD population, which I think is going to be tricky.
So that's where we're going to go with this next patient. But along those lines, Dr. Roberts, as the ex-president of UNOS, are we going to put into this system, are the nephrologists out in the audience going to be asked to speak to their patients about what KDPI they're willing to accept?
No, that's our trouble.
That's our trouble. Are we going to do that? Are we going to do that with every one of our patients? Ask them what KDPI?
Well, do you want one over 85 or less than 85? That's the question.
No. Do you want one over 7? Within the standard criteria bracket, are we going to ask the patients what KDPI they are willing to accept? We're not. Okay. We're going to just hopefully... KDPI. Really? So do you really want to get into that at 2 in the morning? Rio, are you going to call a patient up and say, we have a KDPI of 60%? You know what that is, right? Are you going to take this kidney?
I don't think that that's actually not only justified but fair for a patient in the middle of the night to even consider that. You know, the rules say that we have to get consent if you're going to even think about getting KDPI above 85%. That's what the rules say right now. Because 85% or above is the same as ECD now in terms of what you have to get for consent before you offer the kidney. These, as Sang says, you know, the KDPI is not so granular that you can tell me that a 75% is so much worse than a 65%. You saw the curves. They're pretty flat until they get out to 85, 90% anyway. And so there are other factors that go into whether an appropriate kidney is given is going to be good for an appropriate recipient. There's about 15 or 20 things that go through our minds in the middle of the night to figure out that in general. To say that a person should really tell us ahead of time what KDPI they would accept versus reject is really unfair, I think, and it really misrepresents the usefulness of KDPI.
So do you think that we have to have this discussion? Our coordinators, they're out there. Are they going to have this discussion with every patient?
Well, on some level, I think that patients and nephrologists have to eventually trust the transplant center to make certain judgments. Now, the 85% mark is a mandated mark, so we have to do that.
Right.
And we have to describe things like CDC high risk. That's also mandated. Other things, I think, are not, and they're not so crystal clear. And the data doesn't support very strongly a very strong statistic for KDPI anyway. So I think to put everything on a number like KDPI is not only misrepresenting the usefulness or power of KDPI, it puts patients in a bad spot, and it puts nephrologists in a bad spot, too, if they have to explain this.
So let me ask you this, Rio. That kidney is being offered to this patient now. She's also waited 7 years, but she's a little lady. Let's say she's 66 years old. Would you take it first of all, would you take it if she was 56? Would you take it if she was 66?
I would take it when she's 66. I would not take it if she's 56. And the data that I base that on is if you look at the cutoff of patients above 60 or patients below 60, if you look at the relative increase in risk of accepting an ECD kidney, it's much less of an increase in risk if you give it to the older patient, and especially patients that are diabetic as well. If you look at that combination of things and look at the effect of taking an ECD kidney versus an SCD or high KDPI versus low KDPI, it's much worse if you give it to a younger patient.
Sang, would you take it for this patient? And Chris, would you take it for this patient?
Not at 56 if she was healthy.
And Chris?
I'd consider it for this patient.
Yeah.
Why don't you ask the nephrologist in the room if we called them up and asked them
at 2 in the morning?
No. Is it good for you, or do you want to know whether it's good or not?
Yeah. Let's ask this group what they would do at if we called you for your pay. We do call you, but we don't get down to this nitty gritty. And I don't think you'd really want us to. I'm not sure. Maybe you would.
But what if they were the patient?
Okay, if you were the patient, would you want this kidney? How many say yes? So about 4. So there you have it.
But Peter, it's only good to turn it down if you're going to get a better kidney the next time around.
It's not black and white, and that's the point.
I want to make a point. That
yes.
Patient, is he good to go? So I think people should be told.
I think that's an important point. So you think we should say that this isn't the best kidney? Okay. Yeah, so I've got another case to talk about along the lines of asking patients, and we're going to do two more cases and then get wine. here's another the flip side of it. This donor is classified as an ECD. The KDPI is 85%. She was 69 years old, small. She had a history of hypertension. She died from a CVA. Donor team tells you there's adherent fat and a markedly atherosclerotic aorta. Her terminal creatinine is 1.7. Now, that kidney can go to a 55-year-old diabetic man who may be in some trouble. He may have cardiac disease. So let's say he's got some access problems. Let me ask first the panel, would you take this ECD kidney for this 55-year-old diabetic patient? He's got some cardiovascular disease. He's been having access issues. Rio.
First of all, that donor does not have a KDPI of 85. It's more like 99.
What he's like to work with, by the way.
But this is actually not an easy one because he has 3 years in our way, in our list. This would be, 5 years away from getting the top of the list for regular kidney. And so he's now at the top of the ECD list. This is a sort of crappy donor. So I would accept duals for them, but not maybe singles.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is the kind of donor that would be at risk for being turned down, period. Even in our current allocation system, we're not putting in anyone. So I think you'd have to, based on the appearance of it, you may want to do a biopsy, although that usually leads to discard when you do a biopsy. So this is a tough, if this kidney doesn't work for this guy, then he's in real trouble. So I would probably pass.
Yeah, I'd pass on this one too. I mean, he still has a reasonable opportunity to get a better kidney, so.
Okay, this is the last one we'll do. I was going to get into a Hep C case too, but let's just leave it with this one because this is an important issue. Getting to your point of your patient who was called in the middle of the night for an ECD kidney, this is more likely scenario of them getting a call from us. So this is a 31-year-old male professional athlete who had trauma sustained at an athletic event. He had multiple heterosexual partners, a recent history of treated gonorrhea. So he falls into the category of CDC high risk. That is a CDC high risk donor. That means that the kidney can only be offered to somebody who has consented for a CDC high risk. His terminal creatinine is 1.1. The KDPI is 21%. NAT testing is negative. This is a good kidney, right? Person at the top of the list is a 42-year-old male with end-stage failure secondary to GN. He has not consented to a CDC high risk. When we explain what a CDC high risk is, we explain it could be this professional athlete with multiple heterosexual partners. It could be any man who had sex with a man. They automatically get labeled. It doesn't matter monogamous or not. Or IV drug abuse. Those patients are labeled as CDC high risk. And when we explain the risk, they test negative by NAT testing. They test negative. But those are donors that have a 1 in 10,000 chance of having a false negative test. When we tell that to patients, it is very likely that this 42-year-old patient said no to a CDC high risk because they just heard there's a small risk of HIV. So at 2 in the morning, I'm going to ask you, and then maybe the audience, if they would call the patient at 2 in the morning and try to explain what a CDC high risk is. Dr. Hirose, we're not going to start with you, because you already said that you thought it was unethical to call a person at 2 in the morning to...
For the KDPI, yes. But this one's a no-brainer. This one I'd take for me or my daughter or for my wife. I'd take it for anybody. Okay. And the reason why I say that is that the level of risk for this particular CDC high-risk behavior is so low. It's lower than you getting struck by lightning that you're going to get something bad out of this kidney. So I think people understand that.
So are you going to call a patient at 2, or are you going to have our Crystal?
Crystal can do it, or I can do it. I don't care. I'm happy to do it.
Do you think you should do it?
Certainly, if Crystal doesn't want to do it, I can.
In other words, Crystal's going to do it.
No, I'm happy to explain to a patient in the middle of the night what this means, because this designation of all high-risk patients is sort of bogus. They have different risks.
Sang, do you call the patient?
Yes, one of us, in practice, we rarely call patients ourselves on call, as you know. But the real disappointment is that the UNOS committee didn't get rid of this as a CDC high risk.
That's the CDC. That's not the UNOS. Don't blame UNOS.
Because this is an absurd scenario, actually, because of just what Rio was saying. The risk involved with the CDC is ridiculous, right? So even with IV drug use, it's extremely low. So I would try to convince the patient. I think I would do everything in my power to try to convince this patient to get a transplant.
And the audience, let me just ask the audience, how many would recommend convincing your patients for this? Okay.
So one other comment. Probably about 25-30% of our donors are going to fall into the CDC high risk criteria with the new. With the new definition. So this is not an uncommon thing. And, of course, we try and explain the concept of high risk when they come through for their eval. But the problem is the patients that don't sign up right away, which are easy because we know they're going to be okay and they'll come in. But the ones who don't, and we get a really good kidney for them, I think we have to try and talk to them in the middle of the night. I think the coordinators can have the screening call, and if they have patients that have questions, the surgeons, I think, would all be happy to talk to them and explain the situation.
Okay. So we were going to talk about hepatitis C, because let me just briefly say that if you have a recipient on the waiting list that has hepatitis C and they consent to receiving their genotype 1, and they've consented to receiving a kidney from somebody who's HCV positive, they will have to wait 3 months for a kidney. That's it. Not 7 years, 3 months. Now, you have heard about the new therapy for hepatitis C, clearing virus, even with genotype 1, about 100% of the time. We can clear hepatitis C. Should we clear the virus and then put the patient on the list and have them wait 7 years? Or should we give them a hep C positive kidney and treat them afterwards? What do you think? How many are in favor of 7 years of dialysis and hold on treatment? How many want to give them the kidney and then treat? So you're all in agreement. It's interesting that that's an area of debate. So I think maybe in part related to the cost of the drug, which is around $80,000 for a course of treatment. So anyway, thank you very much for your attention. I think we can talk about it over at wine.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.